Welcome to Silence the Mind Cluck. I'm your host, Maria T. Finch, and I'm super glad that you're here. Get ready to quiet that mind and reap the rewards. Welcome, everyone. You may hear my dog chatting in the background. I'm Maria Finch. I'm an inner intelligence coach, and I am thrilled to have Sarah Roachlos with me here today. Welcome, Sarah.
Well, thank you for having me, Maria. It's a delight to be here.
Great. So to start out with, please tell us a bit about you.
Well, I am a feminist business strategist. I live on the east coast of Canada on a tiny island called Prince Edward Island. Uh-huh. And, you know, really what I love to do is support, what I do in my business anyway, is support service-based business owners to really understand the business side of their business and sort of demystify some of that, like those stories that we tell ourselves about not really understanding, in both teaching capacity, coaching, and advising.
Wow. Yeah. And that sounds very useful. I think there are many, many people who could use that kind of help. So that's wonderful. So tell us about a time in your life when you faced a particularly high level of mind cluck.
Sure. So I have a chronic illness called Meniere's disease, and it causes an imbalance of the fluid in the inner ear, dizzy spells, hearing loss, and like sort of general misery when it is active. So it's episodic. Okay. I've had it since I was 15. Wow. 14, 15. And I had a beautiful 10-year period when my kids were little where it wasn't active at all. So sort of forgot I had it other than kind of lingering hearing loss and stuff. When I started my business, so I worked in the not-for-profit sector for a feminist organization for almost a decade. And, in many ways, I was, incredibly lucky. I got to be paid to be a feminist. I was working my dream job. So much goodness. And even in a really fantastic job, sometimes, you get burnt out and you're ready for a change.
Yeah.
Excuse me. So no, I was in this particular phase of life where for the very first time in my life at 45, I decided that I wanted to go out on my own. So I would become an entrepreneur. I had so much mind cluck. It wasn't even funny.
I can imagine.
If you had have asked me at the time, I would have not even been able to acknowledge how much stress I was experiencing. And so I was someone who was really, I was a leader. I was sought out for my expertise in, gender equity. And so to go from that to starting my own business, I was terrified of the idea of sales. So I told myself lots of stories about how I didn't have the roach sales gene. All of my dad and my uncles were all really good at sales, but I didn't have that gene. And I had, all of these stories. And one of the bigger stories I had was around living with a chronic illness. And I had some pretty significant ableist attitudes going on in my own head.
And can you explain that a little bit?
Yeah. So, we think about, I had told myself a lot of stories that people wouldn't respect me if they knew that I had a chronic illness. Probably wouldn't hire me. It sounds ridiculous right now when I say it, but the stigma that I myself attached to having an illness. And I didn't really give myself much grace. Whereas, when I have staff again, but when I worked for that not-for-profit, I had all the grace in the world for other people who had illness, but none for myself.
Oh, okay. Yeah. I understand.
So I had a moment when I was driving home from work one day I live in the country. Mm-hmm. And I had a pretty significant dizzy spell while driving.
Oh.
And yeah, so enough that I was like, oh, I got to pull over. So I basically pulled over and couldn't really see. So I just sort of slowly drove into the ditch.
Oh, yikes.
Yeah, it was really not fun. So I didn't hurt myself and I didn't hurt my car. Mm-hmm. But it was a really challenging time to be 1 month into business. No steady. My husband is a commercial fisherman, so there's no steady salary anymore in our household. And here I am, really in the ditch.
Yikes.
Yeah, so it was tough. It was a tough, tough time in my life.
Yeah, that sounds like it. So first thing I wanted to ask you is you said you couldn't even acknowledge how much stress you were under. Was that because you weren't really aware of how much stress you were under, or it was like acknowledging it would make it more real? Or tell us a bit about that, because I found that really interesting.
Yeah, I think a little bit of both. Okay. In that period of my life, I was not sleeping, like chronically not sleeping that summer. I really had made an awareness that I could drink or I could sleep, but I couldn't do both. So those like wonderful evenings around the campfire in the summer when you're having a couple of gin and tonic were now resulting in being wide awake all night long. So
interesting.
Yeah. So like my body was really out of whack. I was secretly really worried about, could I make it as a business owner? Could I make it as an entrepreneur? Did I have what it took? How was I going to figure this out? I don't know how to sell anything. How am I going to make money? And then, you know, the health issues on top of that. And I mean, that is the challenge of being an entrepreneur, particularly an early stage entrepreneur, is you actually don't know what you're doing. It's a function of the stage of business.
Right, right. Absolutely.
And equally, that's where you're like, yeah, everything's great. Buy from me. Here's my sales page. You know? Want to know what I can do for you. And yet secretly, I mean, it truly is that duck under the water, right? You know, like on the top, you look like you're swimming beautifully, and under the water, you're like,
Yeah, I understand. So tell us, what steps did you start to take to silence that mind cluck and be able to give yourself peace and grace and move on?
Yeah, that's a great question. My husband came and got me out of the ditch, over those next few days, one of the most important things that I did that I actually didn't realize I did for a long time, but I surrendered. And so for my whole life, my whole working life, I hid the fact that I had Meniere's disease. I did not want my staff to know. I did not want stakeholders, funders, anyone to know. And so I treated that illness with a great deal of shame. And it played a big role in periods. I had lots of periods of great wellness. But when that happened, I really distinctly remember getting up the next day and going, all right, Sarah, you got yourself into this. What are you going to do? And one of the things that I did was surrender and decide, okay, so your current reality is you are sick 3 or 4 days a week, cannot get out of bed sick. So on those other days, you darn well need to be in your very best health. So rather than rejecting this idea of, you know, pushing against, I was like, okay, I'm just going to be sick 3 or 4 days a week. So on those other 3 or 4 days a week, I need to make a commitment to wellness. So I decided I would go for a walk every day. I would change my eating habits and I would start a mindfulness practice. So I did all three of those things that week. And I was in, like I say, in bad health, overweight, dizzy all the time. And I would literally go out in the backyard and wobble around for 5 minutes and come back in and lay down because that was all I could do.
Wow.
So the key thing for me really, and I didn't realize how important that was at the time, but surrendering to the illness and surrendering to this is actually where I'm at right now. And when I accepted who I was, then it got easier and it got better.
That's amazing. How did you inspire yourself to make those changes so quickly?
Well, I really felt like I had no other choice.
Okay.
I really did feel that way. And until then, I actually thought self-care was stupid and I didn't have time for it. And and I really just realized that I really did feel like I had no other choice. I felt like my back was up against a wall. And I really honed into accepting that I was going to be sick. And so wanting to do whatever I could to make those well days as well as they could be.
Uh-huh. Yeah. That makes sense. Yeah. So tell us about your mindfulness practice. What are your regular go-tos?
So I, you know, it's ebbed and flowed over time. That story is 5 years old. So that happened 5 years ago.
Okay.
And over those 5 years, it really has ebbed and flowed. I started with like guided meditations and I did guided meditations for a really long time. In the early 80s, my parents and my aunt and uncle learned transcendental meditation. Mm-hmm. Which, you know, we lived in the country, rural. My parents were fishermen. It was pretty kooky to be meditators in the 80s. But they also taught us and took us to learn how to meditate. And so when I started mindfulness practice, when I started guided meditations, I took a couple of sessions, like trainings on meditating. And there was one that they gave me a mantra, but it was my old mantra that, like, I could not remember the new mantra. It was the old TM mantra from when I was like 8 years old that kept coming into my mind. So I found, meditation was always a part of my life, but something I only did when I was stressed or when I was really tired or, you know, like it was not a daily practice. And so my mom connected me with the same transcendental meditation teacher that I had all those years ago. Wow. And the joy of Zoom, he was in India. This was early pandemic, I think. So he was in India and I was in PEI. And so he like did some meditation checks. So I did transcendental meditation for a long time. And then like, I just stopped doing it one day. And so I do that. I've do a couple of different kinds of meditation, I guess. And when I say I stopped doing that, I am not as consistent as I once was. I try to meditate twice a day. Sometimes it's once a day. Sometimes it's every couple of days.
And when you're, so for people who are listening, who are not yet into meditation and who are thinking like, oh gosh, I couldn't possibly do that. Describe for us how you would suggest starting a meditation practice.
I suggest starting with a guided meditation because and something really short, like in those early 5 years ago, I was doing like sometimes it would be 1, 2, 3 minutes, 5 minutes. Most of them were 5 minute meditations. Google them on YouTube. You don't need to spend, you know, like there, you don't need to spend a lot of money on it. Just Google, find one that you like, you know, sort of pop around till you find one that you like. And that's what I did. And it was really dependent on what I was looking for. So I remember the first webinar I did, I was so freaked out. Because you know what webinars are like? Like you're speaking into the void. Mm-hmm. And it doesn't matter how prepared you are. You know, we've all been on the webinar where the facilitator or the presenter is like kind of frantic with a high voice going, it all worked 5 minutes ago. I was complete. I was so stressed that it was all going to fall apart. That I did like a guided meditation for relaxing. And then other times when I was feeling like I often would feel fuzzy is a precursor to dizzy. So, I would lay in bed and do a guided meditation for energy. So, and you can do a meditation for restful or relieving your anxiety or, whatever it is. I think what we often think is that there is a great quote, and it's something like, I will butcher it, but it's a meditation teacher, and she said something like, we don't practice meditation to be good at meditation. We practice meditation to be good at life.
Oh, I like that. Yeah.
Yeah, me too. And so for me, I think one of the things when we're early in the meditation practice, well, my mind races. I can't meditate. Well, that's okay. Like, and I think that's a little bit of a difference in the practice. Like a Silva practice sort of embraces, like there's a difference between like a dynamic meditation and a more, I don't know what the other kind is called, but essentially, there's one where you're really trying to quiet your mind. And then like a guided meditation is more around directing is the way that I would say it. I am no expert, but I just know that it works really well for me. And in terms of when we think about what do we need to do to kind of quiet and calm, it's incredibly effective.
I agree. And for our listeners, I think it's really important to remember that you can start with 1, 2, 3 minutes. You don't have to start with a 20-minute meditation or whatever. And the other thing to remember is that when you're meditating, it's not like your mind goes silent. It's like, I always say, think of it as the thoughts that come in. It's like they're on a ticker tape or they're on a cloud. Or they're on a balloon and they're just passing by and you let them go and then you go back to your focus. And I really like that about a guided meditation is directing your mind somewhere, because directing your mind somewhere is a great way to quiet it. And then, for those who find it peaceful, accessible, et cetera, to just truly silence your mind with meditation is also a beautiful thing. Yeah. So tell us, what other tactics do you use in your business and as you're advising people as they're starting an entrepreneurship journey?
I think one of the things that is really important to me is getting clear on what's ours to own and what's not. Mm-hmm. And as a business strategist I'm a feminist business strategist. I focus on supporting women and gender minorities, women in particular, because that's where my experience, my expertise lies in terms of, sort of those big picture systemic barriers that women face. Mm-hmm. And so one of the things that comes up over and over again for women in particular is, I don't feel comfortable or confident in my business, even though it's mine. And how often we talk about challenges around confidence. And, one of the things that I really think is important is to identify what's yours. What is yours to own, and what are the systemic oppressive structures, the messages that we are told from the time that we are sorted into pink and blue onesies about what it means to be a girl, what it means to be a woman. And I think that to me is something that is really important and that we don't talk about enough is, we can spend time really, blaming ourselves or shaming ourselves into or out of mind, mind trash. But at the end of the day, sometimes it's a matter of like, actually society, patriarchy, oppressive structures, this is yours to own. And I'm not owning those stories anymore.
Yeah. Can you give us a specific example just for people listening if they're thinking like, okay, well, I think this about my business, and you could say, oh, you know what? That's really systemic. Can you think of a good example?
Well, there's so many.
I can imagine.
Yeah. So I think one that it's really often around messages. And so one that I often hear from folks, or we will hear placed on women, on a woman in business, like there's no place for emotion in business. And, you know, oh, she's so emotional. And you can hear that sort of dripping with judgment. And as women, we've all had the experience of not wanting to talk because our voice is going to crack, or they're going to hear and they're going to know that we feel strongly and we're emotional about something. And so being emotional is one of those negative gender stereotypes. In certain ways, obviously, emotion is really tied to nurturing, which is something that we really value in women in relation to motherhood. But in relation to business, there's this like, you know, slap on your power suit, put on your, you know, on your Teflon armor and march to the office where, you know, we need to not show that emotion. And so that to me is one of those places where gender stereotypes are used against women. And the reality is when we look at a feminist business strategy, when we look at using the whole of who we are to our best benefit, business is emotional.
Absolutely.
Right?
Absolutely.
And so for us to be comfortable with our emotion and be comfortable with you can trust your gut and look at the hard data at the same time. Both of those things should be part of your strategic decision making.
Yeah, I like that. And I what was, as you were saying this, sort of some situations in my life were playing in my mind, and I can think of, I really look at as a woman expressing emotion as part of just being human. And I feel like if I turn into, you know, a robot, if I'm playing the robot game of like, oh, look, I'm not emotional and I'm, you know, just at the top of my game and whatever, you disconnect. Whereas if you show some vulnerability, you connect more. And that only enhances your business. And I know this from, like, I know this benefit from experience in my own life.
Yeah. And yet vulnerability, showing that vulnerability is sometimes really challenging. And I've experienced that challenge in my own business and in my own life. And yet there, as you've sort of noted, there is great benefit to it. There is great benefit to us as not having to hide who we are. That's exhausting, right? Like when we go back to like, how do we silence the noise in our head? Well, being as authentic as we possibly can in as many moments of the day, that helps silence, you know, the noise.
Yeah. So I really talk a lot about connecting with inner intelligence. I mean, people call it different things. So your gut instinct, your intuition, your inner wisdom, whatever you want to call it. And in my own experience, if I can really center myself there, then that means I am going to be who I am in the moment. So I'm going to go with my emotion. I mean, obviously, you know, we've got societal norms. So you're not going to flip out in an inappropriate way if you can control that. But at the same time, to show how you feel about something and to invite a genuine response from somebody else, it just deepens all connections in my experience and ultimately makes for a smoother path. That's been my experience. Has that been yours?
Yes, I would say that to be the case as well, that, you know, having those deeper conversations and deeper connections has such value for us and the people around us. Absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah. So what else, what other tips would you have for our audience about other ways to approach MindCluck, to approach entrepreneurship, a woman working in a man's world? This is something I think about a lot. I think it's so relevant. And especially for our younger listeners, like, this is important stuff to learn when you're young.
I think the one for me that is probably most helpful is, there's a couple of things. One, find your good feeling place. And again, when we go back to those gender stereotypes that women are plagued with, and part of it is, you know, women are really taught to put everyone else's needs above their own. So we are taught to be good mothers, good wives, good partners, good employers, good daughters. The list goes on. And, you know, the narrative attached to that is you put everyone else's needs ahead of your own. And as I mean, I tend to think about entrepreneurship, but really whatever it is that you do in entrepreneurship in particular, when we focus on our own needs first, that is one of those ways of really just feeling good. And when we focus on feeling good, number one, that's a radical act because we're not taught that that's okay. So one, be radical and look after yourself first. And two, that's when we focus on our own feeling good. That's when we're spending more time working in our own zone of genius. We are outsourcing the things that we don't like to do to other people who do like to do that. So when we prioritize our own feeling good, that actually makes for better lives and business. And, you know, a really quick example of that is when one of the moments of the pandemic that was an awareness was recognizing that my kids, we need to drive them to the bus every morning. And at that point, we needed to be leaving home at 6:45 a.m. for the 7 a.m. bus. It was ridiculous.
Yeah.
And so after many, many months of pandemicking, what I realized is, there's a correlation between that early harsh start in the morning and me feeling dizzy. And so when we went back to school, I said to my husband, I'm tapping out. I'm not doing that anymore. I can't. And so, you know, Scott is a lovely and wonderful and supportive human who said, sure, no problem. and is also a human who forgets. And so there were a few times when he would say, who's driving the kids? No, that's you. And in previous times, I would have sworn under my breath, been the martyr, and said, I'll do it. Even though I know that it is not best for my health. It's not looking after me first. And so this one moment, like this one habit of looking after myself first, has amazing, like, I feel much better most of the time. Which means I am a better wife, a better mother, a better person to live in the same house with. You know, my ability to make money and contribute to the household, all of that is improved when I look after myself first. And at that, from the outside looking in, can look really selfish.
Right. And the thing is, but I think that that's societal. I don't think that's real. I think that's societal because the reality is if everyone would be a little more tuned into their own energy level, their own needs, so not being the martyr, not doing the extra thing because, you know, you're worried about what someone will think or whatever, and actually saying, okay, you know what, this is what's going to work best. And then I'm ultimately going to be able to offer more if I set and hold this boundary.
Yeah. And I just want to acknowledge, like, there's a ton of privilege in what I said, right? Like, I have a partner who is able to, you know, like, not everyone has a partner. Some people are lone parents. So, you know, I recognize there's privilege in what I said. And I see with my clients, I see with the work that I do, I see in my own life that we can all find the things that we need within our world, you know, to do what we need to do. So for me, that was a big one. And, you know, the other interesting piece around that is, as I said, my husband is a commercial fisherman. Mm-hmm. And so for parts of the year, he's gone fishing long before the kids get up.
Uh-huh.
And so what that allowed was, rather than me defaulting back to that, my father-in-law now takes, well, I only have one in school now, but my father-in-law is on driver duty in the morning. And so that just, you know, these domino effects of them getting to have that opportunity for a relationship and for that, you know, touch point of just regular connection every day. So
yeah.
I think those are the things that, you know, when we allow ourselves to put ourselves first in whatever that capacity may be, then it does open up this expansiveness of joy for other people as well. And does require us to, you know, I have this idea about, like, being okay with people being wrong about you.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's another real key piece to this, you know, calming things is, like, everything that's going on in your head is a story that you tell yourself.
Right.
And when you focus on your feeling good, part of that is just being okay with people being wrong about you, that it is okay. It's really hard.
Yeah.
But it is okay.
that is such a good message, because just think about, like, simplest example, you're really tired. So you say, you know what, I'm not going to go to that event. Mm-hmm. And so in your mind, you could be thinking, oh, people think you're selfish. People think this, people think that. And you can be like, you know what, that's okay. I know that I'm doing the best thing for me, which ultimately is going to end up being better for everybody. And you're also by not going to something, you are in a way opening opportunity to other people. It's kind of interesting how that works, but I think that's so important to remember. And it's so true that mind cluck is just the stories we tell ourselves, and you can tell yourself a different story.
It's just as easy to tell yourself a story about how great things are going to be.
Yeah. Yeah. That's so true. Oh my gosh. I feel like you and I could talk for a very long time, but we are at the end of our time. So is there any last thing you'd like to say to our audience before we sign off?
I think the last thing that I would say is just be kind and gentle to yourself, because that is probably the most powerful thing that you can do, is just be kind and gentle to yourself.
That is a beautiful place for us to conclude. I couldn't agree more. For everyone listening, we will have all of the details for contacting Sarah in the show notes. And thank you, Sarah, for being here today so much and for all that you shared. And to our audience, thanks for listening. All right, bye.
Bye.
Thanks for listening. If you found this content helpful, please like, comment, and share across your social media. Are you sick of mind clucking up your days? Book a free initial consult with me at mindcluck.com and let's silence it. Thanks and have a great week.